vehicles anchored with very limited data.
The one side, the orbiter itself, was certified mainly a lot of by analysis. So we did depend on the models. Some of the, but the models are in a large measure different than what today's models are. Some of the models we never did before, like characterization of the laminates in the geometries that are there. There is no other way to get to sound like some kind of capability estimate. But you have to anchor it in reasonable test results. So they've got a whole series of build-up from coupons to large-scale things to try and correlate this. But when you start to combine the whole series of them, it's hard to predict. Similarly with the effects of a loss of a tile or the effects of a loss of a structure, what you're really doing is beating an impact against the structural model that says whether there's the problem. So you have no alternative in some cases. But again, it's done reasonably carefully, and it's hard to understand the certification of it. That's the toughest problem. Whereas on the orbiter test, and I'm sure in the other elements, we had good, sensible testing. That's why debris was itself such a hard problem, because the debris effect is hard to predict. What kind of effect you got? You lose a tile, you're going to lose a crack, you're going to make a crack in a RCC. It's a tough problem.
So then our caution to the agency is to be careful in the reliance they put on their models in the absence of ways to adequately validate the assumptions and the performance of the models. Particularly when you start combining, I'll say, the effects or the results of models that have become linked together.
Yeah. I think there's also a thing that's going to say whatever the models tell you the first flight are going to be different after second and third and fourth as we start to understand. And so there's going to be an effort, if you want to use them, to continue to evolve and refine.
And, of course, you got to say to yourself, any of these models a constraint to the return to flight? And understand that as well.
Now, when you say a constraint...
Is it a constraint to flight?
The performance or the validation of it, or
both?
Okay.
The actual model creation of the model that's in there, the validation of it, and in the past, the answer to that was no. But I don't know in this case what is the constraint. I think that's the issue. I mean, how far is these models are being developed, and what they're going to be used for? If it's what we're talking about, is it for certification, clearance, some understanding, end-to-end certification, or is it just to support the operations or whatever? And that's got to be clear. And I think the point is that we don't know exactly where they're going on all this modeling.
Mr. Chairman, I might add that I have a different recollection of what the CAVE said about modeling, and I think it was the fact that in the trying to understand what the damage might have been on 107, modeling was used inappropriately. It was used outside of its validated capabilities, and I think their caution was, and I don't remember exactly where it was located in the report itself or even whether it was a recommendation, but I think in there was some cautionary information about making sure that the models are validated and that they are used within the constraints of what that model was intended to be used for. I think there was some inappropriate use of models, in the situation of 107. And, you know, I think what we're talking about here is that very same thing, making sure we understand or whether we do have validated models in understanding the constraints under which those models will be used and when they will be used. So I think, maybe a recommendation to NASA to make sure that they fully detail what the capability of the model is, whether it's validated, and when and should where it should be used.
Okay. All right, that's a good summary, Jim. I think that's great. Okay, then after that discussion, because it ties into this, relative to the status of 321, I believe the open issues that you have relative to bringing this forward with a recommendation for disposition have to do with resolution of the Bellows Ice issue. And is there something else besides that?
There's a lot of open work on the final design certification.
DCR.
That we need to look at.
All right.
And, if you assume that it's all going to be done correctly and everybody is happy, then you could say it's back down probably to the bellows. But I think the panel, at least I do, is I want to look at some of this data and probably participate in their phase two DCR.
Okay, and that takes place in February?
Well, the DCR is end of January through the 4th of February, but the board is not until March.
Okay.
Now, they may move that up, but it's scheduled. We saw on yesterday's calendar, it's March 13th or 14th, something like that.
Yesterday we had a discussion about when the next meeting would occur for us, and this was the one of the items that stuck out, and we said that we thought that it would be best to have the meeting at the end of March, sometime after the DCR2 is completed on a tank.
Okay.
And then the other one that was discussed is tile repair and RCC repair, and that also fits out in that time frame. And the final sim, right. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I wanted to make sure I understood what the constraints were to doing that. So it's those two things primarily, the data and that needs the support and be accepted through DCR plus a resolution of the drip lip or the bellows ice issue.
That's what I see is the two major things. There's some, yeah, that's what I see.
Okay.
Thing like this PDL foam water absorbing, that's part of the DCR closeout. You know, I got a sample sitting out in the area to gather moisture, then they'll go weigh it and see if it absorbed any moisture.
Okay. Any other questions relative to the ET debris shedding recommendation status? All right, thank you.
Next chart is one that's for status again. Back in May, we came forward to you all, and the recommendation was to send all the panels, RCC panels, back to Lockheed Martin for complete NDE, as well as the nose cap, the chin chai area, and all the other areas that had the inspection. And we did that. We sent it back. Next chart. But there were some open items that we wanted. The update, the OMRSD for inspection of the RCC tiles. We did not receive that as of yet, but we're scheduled to get it in January. The closure of the MRs and PRs from the detail of the RCC NDE inspection, we wanted to look at those as well. That has been something that is still open. We have received the PRCB directive SO64002. And then we need to close RFI 46, which deals with some more questions about impact test data. Another one that we're looking for that's not on that chart is the status of what happened to 105 nose cap. We haven't got the report back, as you know, that was sent back and found with voids and has been scrapped. We now want to know what's the significant impact to 103 and 104. Apparently, the program office has got that and has cleared 103 and 104, but we haven't seen it, and the program office is now scheduling a meeting for us to look at it as soon as we break from here. So we're saying that we're closing in on this to get it closed. I would say January we'll be ready for this to get to come forward. If you want to have a telecon closing of that complete, or you want to wait until the March meeting, that's fine with us, but it's coming to closure.
Well, I want to make a clarification. We've conditionally closed this one.
Yes, we have.
So the recommendation is to leave it conditionally closed, not to reopen it. Is that right?
That is correct. Okay. We want to be able to come forward to you in January to fully close it.
Okay. Okay. So we've received part of the we've retired part of the conditions. There's still some of the conditions that remain. So the recommendation is a status change or stays as conditionally closed, subject to those conditions that were previously identified that haven't been retired yet.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any discussion relative to that? Okay. If not, we'll leave the condition as it is, conditionally closed.
All right.
Okay, now we got Dr. Daniels and Catherine, Dr. Clark, to talk about tile and RCC repair.
This is 6.4-1, probably the most integrated of the cave findings, in that it addresses how you inspect for damaged TPS damage on the orbiter and how you go about repairing TPS damage on the orbiter, and that's TPS being RCC and tile damage. And so it goes back to what we've been discussing earlier about how you determine what constitutes damage, what is critical damage, what is non-critical damage, what you have to see, over what area you have to see it, what you can tolerate, what you cannot tolerate. And this is very much of an ongoing activity. It's a situation with some very, very good success stories and some situations that have proved very, very difficult to do. It's being driven by the assets that we've got from the standpoint of both asset imagery, onboard imagery, the specific system, the primary system for doing inspections on orbit, which is the Orbiter Boom Sensor System, the OBSS, and all of the impact testing and characterization we've been doing on RCC and TPS. Next slide, please. Basically, where we are today is this is a work in progress. We have in place the stories you've heard about the ascent camera systems, which is a good story, a strong story. We have onboard cameras, which is a good story, a strong story. We have the assets, which are available on ISS for inspection. And we have the OBSS and the weak leading edge sensors. The OBSS has today in development and early qual proved to be much more robust than we'd anticipated. The resolution on the sensors, the decision has been made to manifest both sensors. With the OBSS, it's a two-week schedule slip, but the redundancy provided by this is deemed to be worth it by the program. The resolution provided by this has proved to be exceptional. They have shown with development units that they can see a quarter-inch coating loss on RCC. We're looking at cracks down to 2 to 3 thousandths of an inch in resolution in a slow scan mode. The crew is off looking at operating OBSS, and we're getting some positive results from that. So on the whole, we've got a situation with regard to what we can see and how we can see it, which is proving to be quite a bit more robust than we'd anticipated back in the time of the summer. We still have not established the lower bound that says this is what constitutes a non-critical impact event. There are certain physics associated with it that, specifically with RCC, we're looking at now. There's a flow characteristic in which it's a self-healing type of crack. It tends to, under heating conditions, tends to seal itself. There's a phenomenon above that where we have an impact where there's subsurface damage which could cause a burn through, which we need to understand more about. And this testing is ongoing. There is an activity out there which we're now looking at to understand and be able to characterize all this. And all this testing is coming together now in the month of December, and we're hoping that we'll have this information by the first of the year. And this is an integrated asset activity in which we, from an operations standpoint, the people we're talking to are looking at using all of these assets to make intelligent decisions about what where damage is, where we have to look, the type of looks we have to make, whether they are area looks or slow scan looks, to be able to detect the damage which may be critical to the vehicle. The issue of orbital repair has proved to be somewhat more difficult. In both the tile standpoint and the RCC standpoint. Earlier we thought we had a good solution for tile. It's proved a little bit more difficult in development than we had anticipated, and it's still a work in progress. This involves human-rated thermal vacuum testing because the crew is critical to any repair operation, and access is critical. And we have specific repair maneuvers that we have to do, and we have structural issues associated with getting those things cleared. So repair is very much of an open area right now. The one thing we seem to know for sure today is that by the time we fly 114, we will not have a comprehensive repair capability for tile and RCC. We have the potential for a limited capability for repair for RCC and tile. And today we do not know what that limit is. On January 7th, there will be an activity on the part of the Orbiter program to down select as to the repair techniques that they will go forward toward 114 with development of. And we intend to be a part of that activity, to that information data dump. Following that will be the activity to go off and determine how close we can get to implementing these repair techniques in the period of time prior to 114. We recommend that this is very much a work in progress and that we keep this activity open.
I just wanted to add from an ops perspective that an enormous amount of work is being done on the timelines during flight day 2 OBSS. That would be the full wing leading edge scan. The flight day 3 RPM, that's the maneuver to turn the shuttle around and face the tile acreage to the ISS with the crew members then taking some pictures of that. And also the flight day 4 was the focused inspection procedures. These are all really, really well thought out. There's a lot of work being done, complete with contingencies, if there are problems with the OBSS, other things that you can do to get the inspection work done. Crew training on all of these things is in progress. Chuck mentioned that they've had the crew assessments have been very good, on the, especially with regard to the training for inspection part of it. Not surprisingly, the operations for the repair are not as well established, mostly due to the immature status of the technologies themselves. But rather than sort of sit and wait, NASA has taken the option of working many of these things in parallel. So they have a handle on how to do some of these. They have some knowledge on what's necessary in order to accomplish several different repairs if, in fact, the program decides to go with those. So they're not going to have to start over, start fresh, once they made a decision on January 7th which to go with. So the operations is really moving, I would have to say, as fast as it can, given the situation with the technologies that it currently has. Yes, Chuck?
Or Chuck, whoever. We had some chamber runs scheduled, as I recall, to see how those fixes went for the bubbling in the tile. Do we have any late breaking information about how they went?
We do not. They were to be run today, I think.
Yesterday.
And,
Joe Tanner was going to do the chamber run?
There have been a series of chamber runs. The latest one is happening. They had some success with the material not bubbling, and then they had a and so they've made progress on the materials, but the latest one is running
today,
either this morning or yesterday afternoon.
They've done some chamber runs in extruding from the applicator in non-human rated chambers. They had a human rated chamber run which was aborted earlier,
right.
and then they have this one, which is the next in the series of chamber runs.
They've also done KC-135 runs to see how they can maneuver. Certainly, wanting to know if the tools are effective and whether or not this material will actually adhere to the tiles in any condition, and if it will adhere with gravity pulling against it. The thought is that it would adhere in a zero G.
I was just anxious to hear how it made out in the vacuum.
We all
will have to tell you tomorrow.
Okay. Stay tuned. All right.
Questions? Comments? As we suspected and have continued to see, the real toughest technical challenges for meeting the CABE recommendations are embodied in eliminating the debris from the tank and as we're seeing now, development of repair capabilities for the RCC and tile. I think we all knew that, and the agency knew that the CABE had levied a very high hurdle in terms of developing capabilities, but challenged the agency nevertheless to embark on a program to do everything possible relative to finding repair capabilities prior to flying again. As we would have expected and probably would have said 16 months ago, this is one that we'll continue to watch because it is an evolving situation. And there are no eurekas out there that say, hey, we can go fix what happened to Columbia. Nobody really expected that we would get there in a short period of time, and that has proven to be the case. Even though resources have been extensively applied and to this particular issue, it's a tough technical challenge and one that the agency continues to work on. Our challenge will be to take their progress and success, or lack of success, into the context of the CABE's recommendations. And again, this is the one that, as Jim was talking about earlier, in my mind, it starts tying into our ability to look and say what was the intent of the CABE relative to accomplishing debris elimination, inspection, repair. Capabilities prior to flight, and putting those in the context of what the CABE thought was the appropriate actions to be taken, and then make our assessments based on that. And so our challenge is going to be, as we go forward, is to bring this into that under that umbrella approach, and make sure that that we can indeed complete our assessment in light of the CABE's intentions.
And, Dick, I'd just like to add to that. I think that's an important point for this group to consider at this point, and that is, what is it that NASA's done to date, and what more would they accomplish if we gave them another 2 years to wait to fly, and what is practicable in this particular case? I think they have energetically embraced this recommendation and worked as hard as anybody could expect them to work. And produced a lot. I'm confident that we're going to have a repair capability when we go fly, of some description, limited, but some capability, and certainly it'll be all we can have. And I think we need to, but I believe that this one in the end is going to land in the gray area, and we're going to have to scratch our head real hard to think about this one. But on the other hand, if we say that you got to have more before you can fly, we may be waiting for 4 or 5 years. So this is going to be a toughie.
And as the program has correctly stated many, many times, the proof of this will be a DTO. And they have had an intention to manifest and fly a DTO virtually since day one. Now, once they do a down select to a repair, techniques that they're going forward with will come the definition of what that DTO is. But we'll know a lot more after 114 than we do today.
From the DTOs.
Yeah, right. And that's one of the interesting things about this issue with the return to flight qual on this particular recommendation is it gets stuck in the do loop of really we'd be a lot better off knowing about our repair capability after return to flight, at least after the one DTO and probably two DTOs, probably happened on 114 and 121. And so, again, I mean, you can't hold them to not fly until they've flown. And so I think we have to put that in context when we're looking at the recommendation itself and the intent of the CAVE.
And to a large degree, the ET debris actions taken are in that same category. We'll know more about how much improvement we really have made to the tank after it's flown. And until then, there'll be a question as to whether or not we've completely addressed the issue of critical debris, and maybe even afterwards. Okay, any more discussion relative to that or our thoughts? Then we'll keep this open. Yes,
I think the timing on this is again real time, and we do tag up every week. And I think on this one here that Chuck or myself will give you an update on what the progress has been made on it. It's something that is going to be moving real quick.
Okay.
So okay. Every Tuesday when we tag up, we'll give you an update.
Okay, good. Yeah, and I think we need to address, again, in terms of are we going to look at this in conjunction with 321 ET debris shedding. Right. In conjunction with that, and do we want to try to bring one forward before the other, or do we want to look at them together? ET debris shedding.
They're all three connected.
Right. They're all together.
Yeah.
All
of them.
You got Orbiter Harding.
We've got four now.
Well, it's more than that. I made a list.
Or SSP-3.
But I made a list of the recommendations that sort of flow into this, because I think ultimately we're going to have a flow chart when we do this presentation, and it includes 321, 332, 331, 631, 341, 342, 343, IVASP, and SSP-3. That would be the mother of all closure packages.
Okay. So if we could get all that together, we could.
Whatever you said.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any other comments relative to this one? All right. We have, I believe, one last agenda item, which is a report out by the IVASP group. Is that right? Is that where we are?
Yes.
Okay, and that's going to be done by Forrest, I guess.
Yes, sir. Christine, as you know, was here earlier this week, but she had to leave, and I guess she delegated that to me, and I couldn't think of a good way to get out of it. So I'm pinch hitting for Christine on that, and it deals with the SS 114 Operations Integration Plan, the IOP for TPS assessment. That's the title of the plan, and I'd like for you to note that it is a 114 plan that's constricted or constrained to the TPS, and the latest version of the plan is the the 15th of November. The plan has evolved. That's the latest version of it. And it's been an evolving series of plans over the last year. And the 15 November plan does have an annex on damage assessment processes. Now, the big concern that prompted us to kind of want to see this all pulled together is there's going to be an awful lot of data from an awful lot of sources that are really distributed across an awful lot of different areas and organizations of responsibility. And we wanted to kind of see how NASA intended to pull all of this together so that the information or the data could be presented to the decision makers to assist them in their determination. So that's the purpose of the plan, and the plan is specifically stated as having a purpose of description of the operations to be integrated, a work and analysis to be performed, processes across the board, and the who's responsible for what, and then the operational verification requirements. And that's strictly is specifically stated in the plan itself. The plan as it exists now is a rather large plan. It's over 100 pages. And to me, one of the more significant things about it is it will be PRCB baselined, which means that all of the folks involved in that, which as I've mentioned is a lot of different organizations and different centers, will all be accept ownership and will be constrained or signed up to do what the plan says. So the PRCB baselining, I think, was a good move and is most appropriate. It'll be signed by both the SE and I manager as well as the SSP manager. So the 15 November plan has not yet gone to the PRCB, but it's and therefore it's not a final plan. It is still a work in progress. There have been a series of simulations, paper sims, to validate and help the developers understand the plan. They've gone well. I won't say surprisingly, but I think that their accomplishments are quite notable. And they will continue to use this plan for more aggressive and more comprehensive simulations, and you know, the end result will be hopefully the completed plan, all saucered and blowed and high confidence and verified, will be there for the final dress rehearsal and end-to-end plan, which I believe we've spoken of previously, would be done in March. So right now they plan for a DCR process, but that could become ORR process because it maybe doesn't lend itself to a DCR, but there will be some process that it will be in. Next chart, please. We have some observations to make about this. I think as I've indicated that the plan has evolved, and as you would expect, the first plan was pretty ragged and had a lot of open holes in it. Those were recognized. The folks came together from all the centers and different organizations and have plugged those holes, and the plan now is rapidly maturing, and I think that speaks well for the entire team trying to get it done. They've included many sources of data to support these decisions, and you can see the models, the historical data, or real-time ground testing, but the bottom line is that you want to try to get what that data is telling you into one cohesive, integrated story so it can be presented in a meaningful way. We were very pleased to see that senior NASA management has signed on and accepted ownership of this. That signature by responsible managers, the appropriate responsible managers to include the system program office is a good thing, and I think that they recognize the value of this plan. And the last chart kind of summarizes this by saying that it started out and it's evolved to where they have a good vision, They have gotten commitments across the NASA boundaries. The training program that they have developed and are now in the process of implementing using this plan is a good training program. It builds one exercise, builds upon the other. Now, as I noted on the first chart, I ask you to pay particular attention to the title, which was the STS-114 Ops Integration Plan for our TPS. We really think that this plan is a good plan and a good model to follow, not just for 114, but probably for subsequent flights. It's got all of a very complex process, well documented as to how you do it. And we suggest that perhaps there may be other parts of the operations that could benefit from the way that these people have evolved this plan. So I think our thought, our observation there was that it's a good model to serve for the remainder of the program and should be recognized as such. And we'll probably include, probably the panel or the sub-panel will include their results across the recommendations as opposed to probably a separate report out, but we'll continue to follow it and see how it goes at any rate. So this isn't really a recommendation that we're responding to that lends itself to closing or not closing. It is a following of an activity that we think is very important that NASA has recognized, and we're pleased that that they have recognized it and the progress that they've made on it.
Okay, well, you know, I put this in a category of things that fall into our ability to make other observations, and,
yes.
And we should report on it. We should, yes. And we should make the recommendation relative to the in our report as to this being a potential model for other assessment processes, as you all have defined.
They've done good work.
Yeah, they have. They've responded well. And as we have talked before, their response in looking at this integrated assessment is in somewhat was due to us forming this integrated vehicle assessment subpanel. And so if we helped them focus on an area that we saw maybe coming as one of operational concern and they responded to it, then we have added value that way.
Yes.
Yeah, but I would like to commend Terry Murphy on having done an enormous job. What an accomplishment to have literally pulled this together from not even an idea in NASA's mind to a real plan that is so functional. We think it should be extended to other models within NASA.
Okay, very good. Any other comments relative to the IVASP and the OIP? All right. Let's see. I guess before closing comments, I'm just going to go around at a table to see if anybody has any comments they have thought about relative to today's activities. If none, that's fine. But start down with Ben. Anything?
I went fine. No problem.
Okay. Dick?
The other thing I forgot to mention, we did receive the 321 closeout package last Friday, and I have not totally gone through it, but I did have a draft which I've gone through, and I got to go back and look at the changes.
Okay.
No, nothing else.
Okay. Chuck?
No, sir.
I would say that add at the Shuttle Program Office has been very cooperative in providing us a lot of support and a lot of data that's needed, and it's done practically on a daily basis, and full cooperation with them, and whatever packages they finally got to us, we have, so we'll take it from there.
Okay, Bill? Okay, Tom?
My only comment would address the 911 change. I think it's commendable. It's going to be very, very difficult to pull off, and I think it's going to have a profound impact on NASA engineering. And I wish them luck, and I hope they go slowly and think everything out as they do it.
Okay.
That's all.
Walter?
More of a summary comment.
You know, you mentioned this morning that it's been 16 months. I hadn't toted up yet how many months it had been, but that, you know, in the 16-month period of time, a great deal has been accomplished by a lot of men and women working very hard to get us to this point. And I think this is our first meeting where you really are beginning to see the fruits of the labor that has been invested here. And I think it's really gratifying. And I'd just like to compliment all the people who have given their time here, as well as all the people within NASA who have given their time to get us to this juncture. And, of course, under your distinguished leadership, I think we've moved along very well. So I am very hopeful that we have within our grasp coming to some closure in this process. And like I said, I think that the fruits are valuable fruits and will help the men and women who we're going to go fly.
Thank you. Very, very good. Dan?
Walter reminded me of something my father says about a place that he and I have spent a lot of time at. He says, this is not the end of the world, but you can see it from here. I just want to take a moment to thank the professionals who support us day in, day out, and who will put this meeting together. I don't know about the rest of you, but from my point of view, it's been almost seamless. It's as if we could be anywhere. And I know it's certainly the effort they had to go through to make it appear that way. So I just wanted to take a moment to thank them and Vincent and your staff for all the work you've done to make this work the way it has, as well as it has.
I guess as one of the NASA representatives on the panel itself, I want to thank the panel for persevering and sticking with what is a very complex and an arduous task in returning to flight a shuttle program. And I think the end is, well, the end is in near, is in sight, and, you know, stick with it. And we believe that we'll be presenting you all the information that's necessary to close out and be confident that we can fly safely.
Well, as you know, Dick, the administrator met with us when we started up and kind of helped us kick off our plenary this time, and has taken a personal interest as NASA approaches these major milestones on the way to returning to flight. I took from his words his personal interest in deriving from us some level of comfort that as we go down the path toward returning to flight, we're not passing any milestones that we need to turn around and come back from, and so we're in a good, healthy place and can expect to continue on past these milestones. And he wanted to know, I think, whether there was any long poles sticking out in here anywhere that he had to worry about. And so, therefore, wanted to tee up, you know, any of those things as quickly as possible. In an effort to do that, we have now received packages, I think, on everything from NASA. And that what that meant to us and to them is that there was a tremendous amount, bow wave of work that has gotten done in the last few months in order to prepare those packages for review. Now, we haven't closed all of them, but I think we've gotten everything on the table thanks to the work of a tremendous number of people at NASA who've burned the midnight oil and spent a lot of hours putting that stuff together. And, of course, we accepted some, passed some, kicked some back. But a lot of work's been done, and I think we've got all the cards on the table. And that's a good feeling.
Okay.
Tom? I would echo Walter's comments about the productivity and the accomplishments, particularly since the last plenary. It's been almost a step function order of magnitude increase in results, so it gives you the sense that, you know, we're getting there. And having the privilege of being able to access the floor where hands-on work goes on, you get the sense there also that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Nothing to add.
Okay. Kathy? Rosemary?
I guess I would just say something that I've said before, that
there's no one on this panel who wants to manage NASA. Otherwise, we'd be out there lobbying for Sean O'Keefe's job right now. And I think Dick really hit the nail on the head when he said we're an advisory committee. And we are, although this has been a very positive experience for everyone, I think we're all looking forward to riding off into the sunset sometime in 2005. Yes.
Except for the ASAP panel.
Well, that's another story.
She's sailing off into the sunset.
That's right. That's a whole other story.
The South Sea.
That's for another meeting. But I do want to say, as somebody who studies public organizations, that NASA is one impressive organization, and the staff are all to be commended. They really have put their heart and soul into trying their best to comply with the CABE recommendations, and they do deserve our highest applause in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's see. Set
actions.
You want to? Did you write down some actions?
Look up
and I'll make some closing comments.
Okay. A couple of potential actions, and I'll list them out, and we can determine how we want to formalize them. Informing NASA of concerns with how modeling data will be used, and I guess that can be either be addressed through the interim report or other methods.
Okay.
And second, tech panel.
Who's got that action? Is that the guy on your left? I mean, establish action, that's fine, but who's going to do it?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
And second action that I recorded was tech panel to provide periodic status of 641 development and issues at our tag up.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Well, look, we are 16 months into our work as a task group. We're inside 5 months to the next launch window, which, based upon what I've seen, we should be able to complete our work and in support of that. And of course, our work is not to say whether the space shuttle is ready to fly or not. We do not do that. Our work is to assess the implementation of the CABE recommendations, in particular those that were identified as that should be implemented before return to flight. Our work can be completed without those actually being accomplished completely, because we can always have an assessment that says that the intent of the CABE recommendation may not have been met. And we can still finish our work and save that. I didn't see anything today that says that we're on a path that would lead us to that. But that's an outcome that could come out of our work. And we could complete our work having done that. So as we get within 5 months of flight, we have to look in terms of, and we will certainly feel this. I think the fact that the administrator visited with us earlier this week is part of it, but we're milestone driven too. We've got a milestone that says 1 month before launch, our charter says that we will deliver a final report to the administrator. We will feel that schedule pressure that comes with having milestones and working in an environment that works toward those things that have to come together to make something like a space shuttle launch happen. And we're one of those activities that the program has to deal with. I also would say that probably much to the chagrin of the space shuttle program, we are very demanding and have been demanding in what we have required of them documentation-wise. It's not a matter of them taking their existing work and then just churning it back over and dumping it on us in the way of presentations or whatever. We've asked for more than that. We have asked for it to be presented in a form that it may be unique to our activity. But in our role as an independent advisory group, I think that's appropriate. We ought not be something that we're there paralleling them. Instead, we need to be something that they're having to deal with relative to meeting our needs and objectives in completing our assessments, and I think they've done that. My point is we are additional work for them, and I think we all recognize that. They have responded exceptionally well for that as one of the hurdles they have in demonstrating how they have accomplished the CABE recommendations and the intent of those recommendations and getting that validated through us. And so all those things coming together, the pressure that will continue to mount for the program will be reflected not only in additional pressure from us, but also pressure on us to be able to accommodate what they can bring to us and to complete our assessments in a timely fashion. That all being done, I'm looking forward to the next 5 months and sailing off into whichever sunset it is after the completion of our work, and with the result being us having played a role in helping the administrator and the agency determine whether they're ready to fly. But it's a role in it. We don't make that determination. They do. The administrator will make the ultimate decision on whether they're ready to fly, and we will add additional data, provide him additional data and advice as our charter dictates to help him make that decision. So I want to thank everybody for hanging in there this week. I, too, want to thank our staff for working with the Marshall folks to make this a very productive and nice environment to have accomplished our plenary. The progress, I believe, too, has been substantial, and the remaining work is not daunting. It's programmed, and so it's something that we can take care of, and we just need to sort out when. When we're going to meet again. We'll start addressing the issue of when in our tag up next week, start working toward that, because we do need to set the dates. My sense is that one time we had talked about potentially returning to Florida for that final session. I think my sense is that we'd be better served by keeping it in our facilities in Houston. But I'll let you guys think about that, and if you come back with a counter to that, then that'll be fine. But with that, I think we're done, and thank you all. Have a safe trip. Have a safe trip home.